You are listening to another Screenfish one-on-one live with director Miranda Bailey. Miranda is the director of The Pathological Optimist, which tells the story of Andrew Wakefield, the controversial former doctor who speaks publicly about a potential link between vaccinations and autism. In an honest interview, we get to talk to Miranda about what exactly it means to be a pathological optimist, what Wakefield wants to accomplish from telling this story, and the challenges she faced after the film was completed. Welcome to the conversation. Welcome to Screenfish. Thank you for chatting with me. I'm excited to talk to you about Pathological Optimist.
Sure, yeah. Let's talk about it.
Well, you know, maybe you could start by telling us a little bit, how did you come to be associated with the film and with the project?
Well, I had previously directed a documentary called Greenlit that took a look at the entertainment industry and its, you know, its attempt to go green, shall we speak. And it was a really fun movie, a fun project to work on, and a documentary. It was my first documentary, and Mark and I, who produced that documentary with me, wanted to do another one. And we were, you know, trying to find a similar kind of topic that, you know, you could kind of swing back and forth on, like we did in Greenlit. And that was around late 2009, early 2010, I think. And right around that time, I had kind of heard a little bit of news. It was very fringe. It was like very just like only moms, I think, were talking about it, and not even very many, about this doctor in the UK who was on trial, losing his license, and everyone had a lot of opinions about it that were different about vaccines. People were kind of talking about that. So Mark and I were like, well, let's go take a look and see if there's a documentary here in this space. So we went to Chicago to this place called the Personal Rights Rally, which I didn't even really know about, or that there was an issue with medical rights or anything like that. And it was an event, I think it was maybe more than one day, but I think we were only there for one day. And there's all these different speakers, like from historians to law professors to lawyers to doctors to, you know, bands and parents. And actually, Andrew Wakefield was the, kind of the headliner, I'd say. But we didn't interview him, actually. We had set up interviews with all the other people to see, you know, kind of what they're talking about. And when Andrew went on stage to, like, talk, like, you could kind of just see this crowd, like, get really excited. And, you know, and we were like, oh, who's this guy? This is the guy. Huh, what do you know? And then, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine who's a pretty big documentary filmmaker in New York, and he said, you know, Miranda, if there's a story here, it's this guy. You need to get this guy. Mm. And so I reached out to him via, you know, the people I had met in at the Chicago rally, and asked him if he would allow Mark and I to interview him and ask him questions about the MMR scandal and whatnot. And he eventually ended up declining that and didn't want to do it. So we decided to do it anyway. And we're like, oh, well, this will be fun. We'll have this movie called Chasing Andrew Wakefield. And we'll go and we'll try and interview all these different people who know him and blah, 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 blah. And we'll, like, show up at events. And anyway, so for a year we did that. And we were almost a year, I'd say. And none of this ended up in the film, but this is kind of how it came about.
Wow.
We interviewed a parent who was a patient and met her son, who was a patient, and her father. So that was quite interesting. And we interviewed a lot of people who knew him or people who had written about him. And we tried to interview on camera people who were, you know, didn't like him and whatnot, but they wouldn't speak to us on camera.
Wow.
So I was able to talk to them, but I wasn't able to actually, like, use any footage or anything with them. And they were really nice people also, so I didn't want to, like, I don't know, whatever, ambush them or anything like that. And then in 2011, the British Medical Journal came out. And by this time, Andy knew who I was because I was, you know, he knew who I was because people were like, this woman interviewed me about you, or I would show up at events, and he knew my name and stuff. And obviously, we had spoken once before. And when he ended up on CNN in a really, really poor interview with Anderson Cooper, Mark and I reached back out to him again and said, are you sure you don't want us to get you in an interview? And then he said yes. And he said yes, I think, for his reasons, which were that he, on his end, was taking action, had decided to take action against the British Medical Journal and Brian Deer and attempt to sue for defamation. So that is why he agreed to allow us to do it, because we would also be kind of following him through that journey while we were going back in time, learning about, you know, what exactly this whole MMR scandal was, and making him essentially, you know, answer up to the allegations that, you know, we hear about and, you know, maybe aren't clear on his end. So that was it.
Honestly, it's a pretty remarkable story in a lot of ways, and you really did a wonderful job in telling it. And I absolutely loved the title, The Pathological Optimist. Now, I know he says the term in the film, but I was wondering, like, it's such an interesting contradiction, a pathological optimist. One sounds really positive, one sounds really negative. I was wondering, how do you view even the title for a film like this?
Well, I love the title also. Well, obviously, one, because he calls himself a pathological optimist, but, I mean, he really is one. And one of the things I love about this story in this film, whether it's had to do with vaccines or let's say this was something else, it could be hand washing, it could be anything, is that this is what I view it as kind of like an outsider, is this is like a modern-day Sisyphean story. Mm. Here's this guy pushing this boulder up the hill that's constantly rolling down on him, that, you know, like, the gods have punished for arrogance, you know?
Yeah.
And it really is, I mean, it really is that. And Sisyphus always feels like he's going to get that boulder up there, and it'll eventually go to the other side. And Andrew Wakefield feels that way. Mm-hmm. And the people that support him, and not just look up to him, but almost, you know, in a kind of... I don't know what the words are that don't sound, you know, like, I don't want to say anything bad necessarily about them, but, you know, like a, you know, the more than supporting, you know, almost like a rabid supporting. They also have experienced all the up and downs that we witnessed in this film during the time that we followed them. Mm. And so it was quite a roller coaster ride, because we always kind of thought, ooh, you know, maybe the tide will turn, and maybe this guy, the court case will happen, and maybe everything will change. And, you know, that, or like, you know, maybe he will get exonerated. That'll be great on our film, because we'll get to go to, you know, whatever. And, like, still, like, everything that was, like, positive for them would have changed the course of the film. Nothing happened. You know? And even to the point where we'd stopped making the movie, and he had gone and started making his own, or stopped filming him, but he had gone and was making his own, and we did not realize what Vax was. I mean, we knew he was making a movie about this CDC guy, but, you know, I don't think that Mark and I took it very seriously. And we didn't put it in the film because, you know, we were like, that's boring to watch someone else make a film that's not a filmmaker, you know? And it also happened pretty late in the game when we were following him. So even that, you know, to make that movie and get into Tribeca, and I know he was very excited by it when it happened. I wasn't, but he was. And then it gets pulled. It's just like crazy. It's just, this guy can't, you know, can't catch a break.
Yeah, that's the thing about it, is your interviews with him, he's as candid as he can be. You can sense the honesty coming from him, but he really can't seem to catch a break. And it was interesting because his relationship with the parents was really fascinating with me. Everywhere he went, he seems to have supporters from the families.
Yeah.
Like, what could you describe his relationship, like, with the parents? Like, what is that like?
Well, you know, it's interesting because, you know, now that he's been kind enough to do question and answer forums with this film, which is great and very helpful, because it's always nice to have your subject, you know, if you're a documentary filmmaker, be able to be there as well.
Sure, of course.
And, you know, obviously a lot of people are going to this theater specifically for him, and that he really does have fans. Once, when we were filming him, this friend of mine who worked one day as a cameraman, he's like, you know, Miranda, you should call this vaccine rock star. This guy is a rock star. And I was like, wow, yeah. In terms of the parents, they love him, but they love him because they have, the ones that have experienced vaccine injury, and they have, you know, these are not people that are lying about what happened to their child. They watched it happen. And I interviewed many of them, and I've met many of them. And, you know, not to say that vaccines cause autism, because I think that's kind of later down the line in terms of after the child has a bad reaction from the vaccine. And I think there's a lot of different science that's, you know, out there right now about that. But in terms of, like, taking your child in to get vaccinated and then have them get extremely sick from the vaccine and possibly brain damage, this is really happening. And it's happening to a very small amount of people. You know, it's like 1 in 3 million or something like that, or 30 million. I'm not sure the exact number, you know, in the vaccine insert packets. But if it happens to you, it's very scary. And he is someone who believes them and is saying, listen, we have to listen to these mothers. We have to listen to these. I feel like that's kind of what has grown this adoration to him, because these women have just been dismissed. And, you know, also the media is quite cruel to them, I think. And I think that, you know, the internet is also quite cruel to mothers who have disabled children. It's really bizarre.
I don't know if you can answer this or not, but based on the time that you spend with him, what is it do you think he wants? Is it vindication? Is it maybe the people to just let him free? What do you think the Wakefield really wants?
Well, I mean, it would really just be me, you know, kind of psychologically dissecting him. I think that's a complicated question because I think there's a lot of different things.
Of course.
I know he'll admit that he wants to have his parents paid attention to, which I think is an important thing. And also, from what I can tell about what he's been saying, is that he wants there to be able to be a single measles vaccine option back in our country and other countries again, and re-up that importation license of that single vaccine, which I would like also. I think that that would be wonderful. I always love choices. I like going to be able to buy organic or non-organic oranges. So it's like being able to have choices, I think, is probably better for us. But, yeah, I say I think he probably wants to be proven right, or that he was on the right track. I think he probably wants acknowledgement that he was one of the first people to say there was a gut-brain connection and was dismissed for that. And now it's obviously like standard science. Everyone knows, and the yogurt industries are pushing yogurt exactly for that reason. So I think he wants to be taken seriously and not to be, you know, called a quack and all that stuff. I don't believe he wants to continue to practice medicine.
Right.
I don't think he cares if he gets his medical license back. But I think, obviously, you saw in the movie, he wanted to be able to have an appeal now that the GMC, you know, allegations against Walker Smith were, you know, thrown out the door. Andrew believes that since many of those allegations are the same, those allegations on him should also be thrown out. So, yeah, I think that's what he ideally would like.
Of course.
So really have to ask him.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. As the film sort of comes to a close, you know, you get a real indication that there's almost a fear. I don't know if fear is the right word, but a genuine fear of even being associated with him.
Oh, yeah.
Why do you think that's the case? And why did you want to take this project on?
Well, when I took this project on, it was definitely not the vitriolic society and Facebook and Twitter and all that stuff was not. I don't even know if it was around, really. I mean, it was 7 years ago, so
sure.
Maybe it was, but I wasn't on it. And internet trolls and cruelty wasn't something that was really happening. I don't think I didn't notice when I started. It really grew in 2012, I think. I think in 2012 it really started to kind of grow, this fear. And you could see that the media was also kind of putting in all these kind of scare stories about diseases coming back and whatnot. And even though there would be, like, actual scientists at UCLA, for instance, like one of the times when we were doing this, there was a whooping cough outbreak. Now, whooping cough has nothing to do with Andrew Wakefield. I just want to say that up front.
Of course.
Was dealing with MMR. But there was a whooping cough outbreak in California, and the parents and the media and the internet and all stuff was blaming unvaccinated people, even though the majority of the cases that started were from vaccinated people. And even though this study had came out in UCLA from these scientists saying, no, it's a failure of the vaccine right now. It's not as, you know, it's not as, it doesn't last as long as we thought it did. We think everyone should get another shot. Perhaps even, and there was a German scientist, I believe, that said, listen, we need to go in and change the vaccine, process of the vaccine, because it's a different strain that's going around right now, and we have to change it. But at the end of the day, it's very expensive to do that for a pharmaceutical company to go in and change it. So instead of doing that, they just added another vaccine onto the schedule and had everyone, you know, kind of go get vaccinated. Mm. And I think that's where I started noticing people were blaming unvaccinated people for outbreaks or whatnot. And I think there's, you know, definitely you're protected, like you're more protected and you're more protecting probably society with herd immunity and that theory and everything if you are vaccinated. But I feel like blaming this very, very small group of people for spreading disease, even if they don't have the disease, is kind of a strange phenomenon that's happening now. And you can see it in the message boards and you can see it in the media and stories of measles outbreaks and stories of this. And these outbreaks are very small, but they become this huge, great media scare story that really gets everybody fired up.
Hmm.
You know, and there's a lot of contradictions in these things. The measles epidemic that happened through, you know, from Disneyland. I mean, that's a great story, right? Disneyland and Mickey Mouse and measles, and this is all because of unvaccinated parents.
Right.
How we're going to see this is very scary, but it was like, I don't know, but under 300 people ended up in the United States getting it. I mean, how many billion people do we have here? Yet the meningitis vaccine is not being put on the schedule for college students officially or mandated because meningitis only had an outbreak of 700 people last year, which isn't enough to warrant that. So it's like, wait a second, 700 is not enough, but like 300 is. It's just, and I think meningitis is much scarier than measles. Mm. But I mean, they're all scary nowadays.
As we start to wrap up here, you know, one of the things that I found most chilling is, without saying too much, you actually include a phone call over the final credits between you and your lawyer about the film, and it just really was sort of drove home the fact that even in just creation of this film, there could be ramifications. I was wondering if there were any particular barriers you faced while making this film.
Not while making it, but I will let you know, I've made 22 films, or more maybe.
Hmm.
Never had a problem getting reviewed by the New York Times.
Hmm.
I've made some bad movies, okay? Never had a problem. The New York Times passed on reviewing us. Now, you can't get, you know, an Oscar nomination or anything like that if you don't get reviewed by the New York Times. We went to New York. We had Andrew. We had me. We were able to, you know, do all the publicity that you would do on any movie, and everyone passed because they were too scared to deal with this. Also, after Vax came out, and that's kind of what the phone call's about all the, you know, people were calling the theaters or like, you know, like it was on the news so much that Robert De Niro even ended up pulling it from the festival. That not a single festival other than the Manhattan Film Festival and the Downtown LA, which both also programmed Vax, would take our movie.
Wow.
And I like to think that we would have been able to have a really great documentary festival run, or even mainstream festival run, if there was no Vax. Because I think it's a clear character portrait. It's interesting. It doesn't say anything about vaccinating or not vaccinating or anything like that. It really is just this kind of story of this man.
Yeah.
And I think it would have been able to be a lot more taken seriously as that instead of what feeling like what it is now. You know, the association with him, people don't want to deal with the vitriol.
Hmm.
So, and we even have, I mean, right now, I mean, we're even having problems getting into some theaters.
Wow.
Crazy. Because when he, you know, when we do Q&As, like, there's an audience. But some theaters are like, you know, I don't know if I want to deal with the phone calls or the emails I'm going to get.
Hmm.
You know, because of this guy. And it's just, it's really, truly, it's I think we're at a sad place artistically right now. And I know this is not Vaxxed at all, and Vaxxed is a totally different kind of film, and I had nothing to do with that movie.
Of course, absolutely.
But, you know, we should, you know, like, I'm a legitimate filmmaker, and this is a legitimate story. And, I mean, we're allowing Oliver Stone to tell the Putin, you know, Putin's on HBO, okay?
Yeah.
Astro. You know, making of a murderer.
Mm.
Jay Simpson. Anthony Weiner. I mean, these are documentaries that are out there. But should it be any more controversial than this story? And there's a real double standard and a problem happening with a type of censorship that is going on.
Yeah, and you're right. I mean, the film certainly is very much a character piece. It's just, you know, it's telling the story of this man who's trying to stand up for himself. And, you know, it doesn't. It's not about taking a stand on one thing. It's about this man who's trying to speak out and be heard. And I think it's a story well worth telling.
Yeah, and his family's fascinating. His wife, yeah. What's it like to be married to this guy? What's it like to have your dad be this guy, one of the most hated people in the world?
Hmm.
What's it like to look at yourself on the internet and what people are saying about you? Those are fascinating, interesting things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this movie's about.
Yeah.
It's about looking inside that world, not whether or not you should use vaccines or even if vaccines cause autism.
Yeah.
Not what the movie's about.
Yeah. It's an excellent portrait of a man who's trying to get his voice heard. And Miranda, you did a great job. It's a really interesting film.
Thank you. I look forward to everybody seeing it.
Well, thank you so much for speaking with us. I really appreciate it.
Sure. Anytime. Thank you so much.
And to you at home, as always, we started the conversation. This was Screenfish.